This is Okay, Now What? With Kate Gladden, episode 155. This show is for the young and the anxious, who want the inspiration, motivation, and useful strategies to find courage and clarity when life isn't going according to plan in ways that school never prepared us for. So, if you're sick of sitting there thinking, okay, now what? This show, my friends, is for you. Hey, hey, my beautiful people. I am so happy you're joining me today because you are in for a treat. I am so honored, excited, just like absolutely out of my skin, like fangirling hard right now that I get to bring on my favorite author, Jackie Littran. I came across her book a couple months ago. I've already shared part of the wisdom she taught me in episode 151, Drop Your Don't. That was all that good stuff was thanks to Jackie. And as soon as I read her book, I reached out because I was like, oh my goodness, I consumed it in like 2 days. And I was like, my listeners need to know all this knowledge because it truly is like the key to unlock that door to really learning how to take back control over your thoughts and your feelings and how to have that self-awareness of why, you know, sometimes we like keep self-sabotaging, or we know we don't want to be depressed but we feel like caught in that gray cloud, or we know we don't want to keep arguing with our parents or letting our friends down but it just seems like we're stuck in that rut. She teaches in such a simple way how to really take back that control and make those changes and get those results that you're really after without all the self-sabotaging and the overwhelm. I was like, this should have been taught to us at school. But we all miss that lesson, which is why I love that I have this podcast show where I get to choose your syllabus and criteria and lessons. And this is one that, I just feel so grateful that I get to share with you on my show and that Jackie gave us her time because she is an award, a multi-award winning book author. How about that? She's got one hand over me. I have not won any awards for my books, that's for sure. But she's also a speaker, a teen confidence expert with over 20 years of experience guiding you guys, all the young people out there, to optimal physical and mental health. So make sure you turn up the volume, guys. You're in for a treat with this one. And like I said at the end, it might be one that you want to listen to a couple of times because the way Jackie is able to break down our mind and really give us that emotional awareness and control is just amazing. So without further ado, let me introduce our special guest to the show. Welcome, Jackie.
Thank you so much for having me on. I am so excited for today.
Yeah, no, I've been counting down, looking at my calendar for the last few weeks going, I cannot wait until I can get Jackie on. And some of my listeners, your name might sound quite familiar because they might remember a couple of weeks ago, I shared a segment from your book. I would, but my damn mind won't let me. Brilliant title, by the way, just about how our brain is kind of like a Google command. It like our subconscious mind doesn't really hear the word don't and how to flip that and make it more powerful. But there is so much more going on there and so many layers that as soon as I finished your book, I'm like, my new goal is to bring Jackie onto the show and explain this to you guys to really learn from it. But before we dive into that, I want the audience to get to know you a little bit better and what brought you to be so passionate about helping teenagers grow their confidence and self-esteem.
Definitely, because a lot of my passion for helping teenagers came from my own troubled childhood. I was that teenager that desperately needed help, had no clue where to go. And, you know, if I was to be honest, even if I knew, I probably wouldn't have enough confidence to go seek help, right? Mm-hmm. And so I struggled continuously throughout my childhood. I was anxious. I was depressed. There was a point where I was suicidal. And by the time I was 16, I was making all sorts of very unhealthy decisions for myself. And I ended up pregnant at 16. Not a route I recommend any teen girls to go down. but you know, but looking back, it actually was my first step toward healing because now it wasn't just me anymore. It's somebody I have to take care of. So that sparked my initial interest in healing. And the more that I went that route, the more I want to give back to be that resource for other teen girls so that they don't have to struggle through what I went through.
Oh, absolutely. And I do talk about a big part of resilience and helping ourselves get better is when we do actually sometimes think beyond ourselves and have a greater meaning. And, you know, your son is such a beautiful example of that. So what course did you go then after? Like, you obviously you've gone and got certified in therapy and everything like that, but then you changed to coaching. So what was that transition?
So when I first wanted to help teenagers, I mean, the biggest point in my life that I thought I could use extra support in was the medical system. When I found out I was pregnant, instead of being treated with kindness and, you know, giving a little bit help and compassion, the nurses and the doctors who treated me for throughout my pregnancy and the delivery, they were awful. I mean, like the way I found out I was pregnant was awful. But so I wanted to go into medical and again, be that support system. So I thought about being a doctor and my caseworker at the time, because I'm a teenage mom, so I had a caseworker. And so she's like, you know, you dropped out of high school and you are now just going to college and you have a son. Why don't we slow down, take a step back and think about what else you can do, right? And she was not discouraging. She was being very realistic. She said, okay, so you want to be a doctor. You can be a doctor any day. What about in the interim? What can you do? Mm-hmm. And so she's like, if you are a nurse, at least you have to go through school for 2 years. You have a degree. You have an ability to get a really nice paycheck and you can continue your education. And I'm like, okay, that makes sense. And so I set out to be a nurse and then I got my 2 years degree. I got my 4 years. I got my master's degree and I became a nurse practitioner at 23 years old.
Wow.
And I loved it. I did that for a long time. I did 2 years in regular medicine and then went straight into adolescent health. The last bit of my practice, I actually opened up my own teen clinic. I had a medical clinic called Teen Choice Medical Center. And right before I closed that, I started the second location. But life situation happened and changes in me happened. This is when a lot of my internal healing was happening. And it just didn't mesh with traditional medicine anymore. With the way that I was trained and educated medically, it was get a diagnosis and give a prescription.
Mm-hmm.
And the more I learn about our minds, the more I just didn't feel aligned with that. So I left medicine and started my own mentoring holistic healing practice. And that's been 11, 12 years now.
Oh my goodness. That's amazing. And now you're the author, you know, best-selling author of many amazing teen books, which I've absolutely consumed and inhaled and been crazy about over these last few weeks since I discovered you. I can't remember how I came across your book. It was on Amazon somewhere, but I'm very grateful that you did, because now you've given the world the gift of sharing all the tools, resources, and, you know, strategies that you've used to really turn your life around and live a life that, you know, makes a difference and fulfills yourself. So how do you go, like, from that girl that, you know, had zero self-esteem through to who you are today? And I specifically, I guess, want to dial down. I'll make that question a little more specific, because I'm sure there's many pieces to it. Is about, like, for me, when you really touched on, you know, you've got the goal, you hear the advice, but you can't put it into practice because your mind won't let you. So what was that key lesson and understanding that you begin, I guess, to get a handle over to help make those changes for you?
I'm not sure when and where I discovered the holistic healing. It started more gradually. I know when I made the transition, but it started gradually with me reading every single book I can get my hand on. Once I was ready for my healing, I was just like consuming books. But the books I was reading were all geared towards adults. Mm-hmm. So it didn't really like fully connect. And then when I decided I was going to, you know, shift from medical care to holistic, I actually went to get tons of training. So I'm a master certified hypnotherapist, EFT, practitioner, and all of these different holistic tools. And it's in those things, in all the training that I did, that I discover more and more about the mind and, mm-hmm. you know, how incredible our minds are and how we can actually tap into the mind, because we constantly think and say things like, you know, I can't help how I feel. That's just how I feel. Yeah. I can't change that. Wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that is how you feel because of the programming that is already in your mind. Mm-hmm. And if you don't do anything about it, that program will continue, it will perpetuate, and it will continue to look for more evidence to support that belief. And if you have a belief system that is unhealthy, that is unproductive for you, and you don't do anything about it, guess what's going to happen? It's going to keep building on top of each other. And life is going to get worse and worse and worse. And so once I discovered and studied and fell in love with it, I'm like, I need to share this.
Yes.
People need to know this. And it's such a simple, what's the word I'm looking for? Yes, thank you. I'm like stuck.
Yeah, no, I got you.
Yes, thank you. The concept is very simple, right? But so many people overcomplicate it when they explain it. It's like mm-hmm. these big words and these jargon that people don't understand. And what I like doing in my writing, and the best compliment I've got in my writing is, you write like a fifth grader.
Yeah.
I'm like, yes.
It's so true. Like that's, but it's so easy. Like it clicks straight away. And I was like, this is perfect for teenagers. So tell me then, you discuss in your book straight off the get-go, you're kind of like, all right, let's get down to business on the brain and how in the mind. We've got two parts to our mind, our conscious and our subconscious mind.
Yes.
And I think the subconscious one's really the one that's so fascinating. But can you kind of briefly explain the difference before we dive deeper into the subconscious mind?
Sure. So if you want to think about the two different parts of your mind, they're always interacting. Okay. So the conscious part of your mind is the part that you are aware of. That's the part that you're using right now, listening to this conversation, thinking about whatever you're thinking about, maybe lunch, maybe the actual conversation, maybe how can I apply this? But when you're thinking and focusing on whatever it is you're doing, that's the conscious part of your mind. The subconscious part of your mind is more like a program. It's an automatic thing, you know, sitting in the background of your mind, just running 24/7 constantly. And you are not aware of what's happening there because, again, it's a program, just like a computer program. You know how to get on your computer. You know how to get to TikTok and on Google and wherever else you go. But you don't know what's happening behind the scene. Something's happening behind the scene for you to do those other things seamlessly. And that's kind of how the mind works. So your conscious mind is more like, you know, the various programs that you go to and pay attention to, and your subconscious mind is the background stuff that allow it to happen. Now, all of the stuff that you're experiencing, whether good, bad, you know, neutral, it's because of whatever is in the subconscious part of your mind. And that is stored as belief systems. And we can definitely go deeper into that as a topic. Yes. I love so much.
Yes, please. Okay. So firstly, how do we create a belief system then? Where does it all start?
So usually, you know, the majority of people, the belief system, you know, are fully set, are mostly set by the time you're seven. And that's because from birth to seven, you don't have that conscious, logical mind that's working properly yet. It's there, it's forming, but it's not fully developed yet. You know, so there's various parts of our mind that's still growing at that phase. So you don't have a facility that or a way to say, well, you know what, that's not true, because that doesn't match what I've learned before, right? So when your conscious, logical mind isn't fully formed yet, anything that happens to you that is deemed significant by you, a child, can create a belief system. And that could be significant good, significant bad. You know, we're talking about minds and how to use that to help ourselves. So we're talking about overcoming adversity and things like that. So adversity, negative beliefs, disempowering beliefs, all of that come from significant negative events. Now, a lot of, you know, my clients, when I tell them things like that, and I talk a little slower when I'm in session.
Sorry, let's go. I'm all about it. That's amazing. So, yeah.
But like when a lot of people, you know, when they hear like significant emotional event or emotional trauma, they would say, well, my childhood was amazing. My parents are so loving. I had great friends. I had a beautiful house. I have everything I need. There was no trauma. And yet I'm depressed. That doesn't match what you're saying, right? And so the thing that I really impress on my clients is that trauma doesn't have to be big and major. Trauma could be anything that happened in that snapshot of a moment that was negative to you in some way. Maybe you're embarrassed. Maybe you're scared. Maybe you're ashamed or guilty or, you know, overwhelmed. So just a tiny snapshot in that moment. But in that moment, the younger you say, this is too much. That can be the start of the belief system. Mm-hmm. And once a belief system gets created, it's like that mind in the subconscious, it's like that program, I'm sorry, in the subconscious mind. And it's just sitting there collecting more and more and more evidence to support this belief system.
Yes. Yeah. So my listeners have heard me kind of explain about the, you know, the confirmation bias or the rectal, what is it, rectal activation system for the official name. But, you know, I've kind of told them, like, you know, we have to believe it first or focus consciously choosing to believe it to then scan for evidence for it. Or otherwise, subconsciously, our brain is just, like you said, picking up rocks or eggs or whatever and putting it into the basket and growing that belief system. And we have to become aware of what we're really thinking and first, you know, in order to change it. And I think it's important, like what you said about the trauma. Think about, you know, 5-6-year-olds, it's like relative to them, you know, being yelled at or being told they're a bad child for leaving their toys out or tripping or spilling something. Like, you know, you do internalize that, like you said, when you're so young, especially from people like our parents and that who we idolize. Like, they're our world when we're young. And so to be shunned or left out or rejected or abandoned, like all those things are traumatizing to a 6-year-old that can't really process, you know, a lot of the bigger world. And then if we pick that up, then suddenly we don't realize that's what's running in the background of our life. It's crazy.
Yeah. Another way to look at it is, you know, it's like a lens, a sunglass lens you put on, right? If you put on a pair of sunglasses that is rosy, everywhere you look, you're going to see rosy. Mm-hmm. If you put on dark glasses, everywhere you look, it's going to be dark regardless of what's happening. So whatever belief system we have is the lens that we're going to experience our lives through. Mm-hmm. And those trauma, like you mentioned, you know, it could be something like just being yelled at by your parents. It could be something like that sock under your bed that you are so convinced is a monster. Right?
Yes.
And yelling and screaming for your parents because you're terrified that the sock monster is going to come and get you. And it takes mom to dad maybe 10, 15 minutes to get up because they're sleeping and then come to check on you. But that 10, 15 minutes can seem like a lifetime mm-hmm. to a 2-3-4-year-old. Yeah. So now in that snapshot of a moment, they experience a lifetime of trauma. Does that make sense?
Yeah, right. Interesting. Wow, that's so fascinating. Yeah. Okay. So tell me then, we kind of established where the belief system comes from, and I guess how it grows by, you know, gathering evidence for it. But you also describe it's like a personal assistant for us. What do you mean by that?
Well, before we go there, I'm going to take one more step back because there's another way to create beliefs, and that's equally important. Mm-hmm. And that is by repetition.
Okay.
So you don't have to have that, you know, scary big moment as a child. You can just have something very minor that happens continuously. Mm-hmm. For example, you know, you do something and your mom never yells or never scream at you, never hit, never do anything negative, but she tells you constantly, Kate, you're being a bad girl. And that kind of tone, right? There's yeah. nothing significant about that.
I already got shivers.
But right? Kate, yeah. you didn't shower. You're a bad girl. Kate, you didn't put the dishes away. You're a bad girl. Kate, you didn't put your toys away. You're a bad girl. Mm-hmm. So hearing that over and over and over again can create belief systems too.
Yeah.
Now, okay. The personal assistant, I love that. Because I want you to think about your subconscious mind as your personal assistant, who's there 24/7. Just waiting for a command from you. And whatever command it is that you give your personal assistant, your subconscious mind will do its absolute best to give you that experience. It's not going to go, are you sure you want that experience? No, we did that last week. You didn't have a good time. Let's try something new, right? It's not going to do that. Whatever it is that you ask for, it's going to do its absolute best to give you that experience. Along with that, your subconscious mind's job is to keep you safe. But here's the terrible part. Safe to your subconscious mind doesn't really mean safe. It just means don't change. Because your subconscious mind know how to keep you safe because it's done it this way for so many times.
Yeah.
So if you have anxiety, if you have depression, unfortunately, safe is staying with those symptoms of anxiety and symptoms of depression. Healing, changing, improving. That's scary. That's dangerous to the subconscious mind.
Yes. Yes. And this all is like, I love how you have like a certain way of explaining it. And then I have like, you know, I could kind of talk about, you know, the motivational triad and how it's all about seek pleasure, avoid pain, exert little energy as possible is how we stayed safe. And, you know, now our brain can't perceive the difference between like physical harm and an emotional quote unquote harm in that. Like it thinks, you know, standing up in front of the class giving a presentation is as deadly as a tiger, you know, kind of chasing you down, because it triggers those same like kind of like reactions and thoughts and like, you know, oh no. Like, so I just love that it all kind of comes to together like that. And you had the fun idea of like the stranger, the stranger danger. Cause I kind of say like we're kind of by nature, humans are like homeostasis. Like we like to stay in the same kind of state, and we would rather, even if it's a little bit, you know, not what we is, you know, making us happy, like you said, we're depressed, but we know that state, it's certain, we can like kind of predict what that day is going to be like, as opposed to like the uncertainty of what change could bring and all that, like don't go down the uncertain path, there could be that tiger or something down there. So it's all just so fascinating how our brain works. And that's what I try and, you know, I think it's such a gift to give teenagers, anyone of any age, but particularly as teens, because the world is by default becoming more and more uncertain for them, because more and more things, you know, more responsibilities, expectations, choices, you know, things we've got to pass, we've got to choose to go down. So in saying all that, so we're just talking about like, you know, the personal assistant, and you said we're going to give it command. So can you just kind of clarify what a command is? Because I know someone's sitting there going, I don't like sit there and talk to my subconscious and tell it like, go get me French fries or something. So like, can you kind of like give an example of what you mean when you're like, you give it a command?
And definitely. I hear that all the time too, because I said, you know, every one of your experiences that you have is based on a command you gave. And my clients would push back. They're like, I never asked to be depressed. I never asked to be bullied. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
And so the command is this: every single thought you have, every single feeling you have, your subconscious mind, take that as a command that that is what you want more of. That is the experience you're looking for. So if you're thinking, I'm so depressed, your subconscious mind here, oh, boss wants to be depressed. Let's do everything we can to make sure that boss have that experience, you know? So what your subconscious mind will do is it's going to look in your past history. Anything can trigger that feeling of depression. It's going to start playing in the background. And sometimes, you know, you remember stories and incidences. Oftentimes you don't, you just feel those emotions coming back. You just start feeling blue and then sad and then more and more depressed. And then it's not only just doing that, looking for stories in the background, it looks in your current environment. Anything that can cause that increased feeling of depression, it's going to start to hyper-focus your attention on those details. Mm-hmm. And all the things that could bring a smile to your face, it's going to not even notice. You're not going to even see that. Or if you see it, you're going to dismiss it as, you know, like someone looking at you smiling very pleasantly, and you're in that depressed state, you might see that smile, but then you might be wondering, what do they want from me?
Yeah. Right?
Or that person is just a fake. They don't want to be around me. They just, you know, whatever. So your mind would do those kind of things. And so it's, again, looking in the back for anything in your past to replay. It's focusing your attention on the stuff that's currently happening. And I mean, like, isn't that enough? And it does one more thing. What it'll do is it'll project that fear that you have surrounding that story that you're holding on to into your future.
Yeah.
So if you're depressed because, you know, maybe your family, your parents are fighting and they're near divorce and you're very afraid that they are going through with the divorce, your mind will play all the fights they have in the past. Your mind's going to focus on them sitting on the couch by themselves, not looking at each other. And project in the future of you being shuttled back and forth between the two homes.
Yeah.
So now you get to stay depressed and even more depressed than when you started with.
Yes. Yes. And that's so fascinating. And I think, again, like another great example is, you know, the class presentation, right? You got to give a speech or something. You're like, I'm so anxious. And then I'm going to stuff this up. And then the brain's like, oh, stuffing up a talk, or like, you know, forgetting your words in front of someone. Like, it would go and replace all the other times that you might have stumbled on your words or someone laughed, that, you know, whatever it is. And then you're sitting there and you're looking around and you see someone kind of like giving you a strange look. You're like, see, they're already judging me. And then you predict in the future, like what it's going to be. Like, I can totally, you know, see that scenario. And I know that's one the teens I coach with immediately when I talk about public speaking, and they're like, oh, I'm so bad at it, like this time and that. Like, we've got the whole collection of stories to tell me about it. And that's what you kind of say, that like our subconscious is kind of like a movie store or something, like collecting like DVDs. We have all the scenes. Is that kind of how you describe it?
So your subconscious mind, again, is your personal assistant. And the way I describe it is that your subconscious mind, your personal assistant, is constantly recording every single thing you're doing. Whether you're actually doing it or thinking it or feeling it, it's recording it and it's putting it into the movie library. And it just stored there for you, right? And so when you start thinking about that presentation and you've went through, I don't know how many greats thinking you're terrible at presentation and you're terrified of it. Well, you have a bunch of DVDs of I'm terrible at presentation and I'm going to fail miserably. So when that presentation is going to be around the corner, those movies are going to get popped right into your favorite playlist. Mm-hmm. And leading up to the presentation, those movies are going to be, you know, going in the background of your mind. And again, sometimes you will recall those incidences, but oftentimes you don't. You just start feeling more and more and more uncomfortable because that movie is playing louder and louder and louder and louder, right?
Yeah.
And so another way to look at that is, you know, when you're sitting there, let's say, you know, the day of the presentation and you're going to be called on any minute, right? And if you're terrified of presentation, most people will do this. They sit in the class. Oh God, no, don't pick me. Don't pick me. Don't pick me. Yep. Right. And I'm going to fail at this. You know, I don't know what I'm going to say. I'm going to stumble on my words. People are going to laugh at me. They're going to think I'm dumb. And all of these thoughts are going on through your mind. What you're really doing in that moment, a different way of looking at it, is you're practicing how you will start presenting. Mm-hmm. You're telling your mind, okay, we're practicing, but this is a rehearsal and this is how I want the outcome to look like. Mm-hmm. I want to mess up on my words and stumble on my words and people make fun of me. I want people to see how dumb I am, right? Yeah. And we don't think that, but that's how the mind interprets it. Any thought you have, every feeling you have, your mind is taking that as a command, that is the experience that you want, and it will do everything it can to create that for you.
Okay, so crazy. All right, so we've kind of taken a look at like what's going on beneath the surface of what we can't see and what we're often not aware of and everything about the subconscious mind. So we might be sitting there thinking, okay, great. So for like the last 16 years of my life, I've been telling myself I suck and I'm not capable and whatever, I'm not as good as my siblings or whatever it is. Now what? You told me I've been doing that. Is there any hope of changing it? What's the solution here? Or am I stuck with this same old story and DVD box? Like, what's going on? So tell us, is there any hope at the end of all this?
Oh, there is so much hope. And not only hope, there's a guarantee that you can get out of that thinking. If you decide to be the boss of your mind, you are truly the boss of your mind. You get to give your mind the commands, except no one taught you that. Mm-hmm. It's not your fault. This should be taught in grade school, right? Yeah. How to think and how to command our minds. But we're not taught that. And so you're getting that education right now. So I hope that you'll practice some of the stuff that Kate and I are talking about, because it can change your life drastically. It definitely did mine. It saved my life. And not only did it save my life, it brought me to a position where now I can help other teens, which I'm really grateful for. But yes, you definitely can do something about it. The most important thing Kate already mentioned is start paying attention. Be aware of your thoughts, right? Mm-hmm. Most of us don't realize how negative we are in the way that we think. We think negative constantly, and we don't realize that because, again, we're not taught the distinction.
Yeah.
Right. What we're taught instead, think about it, when you are maybe 2, 3, 4, 5, you're really young, because again, that's where a lot of your beliefs get created, and you're just sitting there minding your own business. Nobody pays attention to you. The moment you do something bad, guess what happens? Oh my God, blah, 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 blah. You're grounded. Yeah. Right. Or if you didn't do something bad, but you got hurt, you know, you fell down and now you got a scraped knee and all attentions are on you. Oh, are you okay? I'm so sorry. Oh, let me go take care of this. And would you like some ice cream?
Yeah.
And so through those kind of interaction, we learn that negative stuff, bad stuff get us attention. Mm-hmm. So does pain, mm-hmm. right? We learn that when we are hurt some way, emotionally, physically, we get attention. And if something negative happens, we get attention. Now, it's in human nature that we would rather have negative attention than be completely ignored. Mm. And I know some people are going to go, no, I'd rather be ignored. Not really. I mean, yeah. Initially, yes, but ignored for weeks and months and years, and you're completely invisible to everybody all the time. No, people, we're not built that way. We're social creatures. Mm-hmm. And so even when we're being yelled at, that is still attention. That is still human connection. And we're wired to need that. And so we do those things and we don't even think about it that way again, because we're never taught that distinction.
Yes. So that's so interesting. I haven't really ever thought about it in that way. I also think, like, for me, I kind of teach as well, like, we don't even realize what's a thought. Like, we think sometimes we're just stating the reality of the way that it is, not realizing it's our thought that's actually created that reality. So you know, it's just like, everything, you know, is so, you know, this is the worst, or that person backstabbed me. Like, well, you know, they might have said something that you asked them not to say, but then when you think they backstab me and you feel so negative, you know, it's kind of just recognizing what's being created in here. And because I feel like for me, it was always this impulse as a teenager, like, oh, that's such a bad grade. I need to go get a better grade in order to feel better, not realizing what was really tearing me down was my thought that that's a terrible grade, or I'm not smart enough. You know, some people think I am just terrible at math, like, and all these things. And it's like, oh, okay. But if I'm actually telling myself I'm terrible at math, and then that's my command to my subconscious mind, it's going to bring up all those exams I might have not gone well at and projected about all the ones I'll fail and this and that. Suddenly you realize, like, oh, like, it's not like we have to, you know, it's just really powerful to recognize, like, that's the optional part that's creating so much of this and what your, you know, your subconscious mind is listening to. And I think the awareness part is so simple that it's overlooked. Like, when I'm like, just recognize your own thoughts, I'm always like, separate out the facts and just see your thinking, and you'll begin to see, like, oh, I get why I feel so stressed when I'm thinking this or that and that. But people are like, oh, no, just tell me, like, the new thought or the new solution. And I'm like, no, we need to just firstly recognize and become aware of them. So yeah, I love that. Yes. You started with that.
I mean, until you really recognize what it is that you want to change, you're going to have no clue how to change it. Mm-hmm. But let me add something to all of this talk to make it even simpler, because a lot of us might be listening and go, but I have like 100 different problems, you know, how can I manage all of this? Now, here's the coolest thing that I learned through all my training and through 11 years of doing this, you know, helping thousands of people, is that no matter what you think your problem is, most likely you're wrong. Because in reality, every single problems can be traced back to just 4 different things. You don't have 100 problems. You have 100 symptoms of 4 things that you can learn to, you know, manage and change. And then it will create, excuse me, and then it will create changes in other aspects of your life. And so again, when we have a significant negative emotional event, or when something keeps happening over and over again through repetition, we create a belief system. And the problems that you experience right now is because of disempowering belief systems. Mm-hmm. And there's only 4. There's only 4 major trunk, and the rest are symptoms of these trunks. And that is a belief of, I'm not enough. Just like you say, I'm not smart enough, right? Mm-hmm. I'm bad at math because I'm not smart enough. So that's a really big one. And that could be, I'm not smart enough. I'm not pretty enough. I'm not athletic enough. I'm not young enough. I'm not a good enough friend. It mm-hmm. go on and on and on of something you're not enough of. And most people, if they have a belief system that they're not enough, they also feel that they're not worthy of something else. Mm-hmm. I'm not something, therefore I don't deserve. I'm not a good enough, you know, athlete, therefore I don't deserve that trophy I won. You know, how does that even make sense? But it makes sense to your subconscious mind.
Yes.
The third one is, I'm not loved, or I'm not lovable, right? Yeah. And the fourth one is really huge. It's, I'm not safe. And I'm not safe could be, I'm not safe, someone's going to hurt my body, or I'm not safe to be who I am because someone's going to hurt me emotionally. So that one really plays into all the other ones. So think about whatever it is that you're challenged with right now and see if one of these 4 or multiple of these 4 are at play, right? Yeah. I'm not enough. I'm not worthy. I'm not loved. And I'm not safe. I challenge you to come up with a problem that doesn't fall into one of those 4 or multiple of those 4. And if you can find it, please write to me, challenge me. I would so appreciate the opportunity.
I love it. I love when you're like, yeah, let's see where we can poke holes in this, because we always want to learn and grow. It could be a chance to evolve. But I'm pretty sure you're right with that one. I'm pretty sure that even in my own life, I think, I feel like for me and so many teens I coach with, it's usually the form of I'm not enough, which then are kind of, well, then I'm not worthy and lovable and potentially not safe because, you know, someone might I feel like for me, like, do you feel like that idea of, which I think is what you were touching on, it's like, you know, I could potentially be rejected. Is that what you kind of mean? Like, I could show up as myself and then someone might not, like with the safe one, is that what you were
kind of meaning? The safe is I'm not safe to be who I am, because if I really show up, you know, and share the way I think and the way I feel, people are going to see I'm not smart enough.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, or they're going to see some other flaws in me and realize I'm not lovable, mm-hmm. or that I don't deserve to be their friend. I'm just, you know, worthless. I mean, those are the stories that we create constantly. And so from a significant emotional event or repetition, those four are created. Every single human on earth have those four beliefs. So you're not alone. Yeah. You're in good company.
That's it.
Yes. But some people, you know, they just let those voices, the internal voice, your subconscious mind's voice, get too loud. They never take charge of that voice. Mm-hmm. Now, even the most popular, the most confident looking, the most beautiful, the richest person, they have those four beliefs and they come up for different reasons than you, maybe for different times. And they might last, you know, shorter than you, but they have it. So just know that we are all struggling with exact same thing.
It's part of our humanness, and I haven't figured out how not to be human yet. So
you don't want that. You want to be human. Human's great. No,
that's what I mean. It's like so many of them, and people wait to take action, and like they're like, I'm not going to do it until I can like get rid of that. And I'm like, no, it's learning how sometimes to keep moving with and through some of those voices and take action that begins to disprove some of those limiting beliefs. Like sometimes we have to sit with the discomfort and practice courage in the meantime to begin to build our confidence and self-belief that we can do that, like we can stand up and do the speech, or we can ask that guy or girl out, you know, just so many different things. I'm like, confidence, sometimes it's a work in progress in different areas, but you can always rely on the courage that like to like in the meantime to keep moving with that fear and those voices. Even as a speaker, sometimes my subconscious pipes up and is like, I don't think you should go on that stage. I think they're all going to laugh you off. I think you don't know what you're talking about. I'm like, okay, noted. Thank you. I'm going to put you in the back seat now. I'm back in the driver's seat. Let's do this. So
I love it. And you know, now that you know that you're the boss of your mind, start taking control, right? Mm-hmm. And that is through practice. What we don't recognize, and because again, we're not taught, those thoughts that we have that are constantly negative, we just practice being negative. Mm-hmm. We can also practice being neutral. We can practice being positive, right? And so what you want to do is, again, first, really take an inventory of how you speak to yourself. I challenge you, listeners, to get a notebook, carry it with you for 24 hours. Every single negative thing you think or say or feel, write it down. You're going to look at the list and go, whoa.
Yep.
And a lot of those things will be directed at you, mm-hmm. right? It's going to be negative talk about yourself. Do that just to become aware of how much negativity you are constantly giving your subconscious mind, and then take the next step. And the next step is learning to be the boss of your mind. Now, in my book, that I would, but my damn mind won't let me, I talk about, you know, commanding your mind and how your mind is like a Google search engine. This part is so incredibly key in order for you to give your mind the commands that you're looking for. So the first part is recognizing you're the boss and your mind will deliver whatever you ask for. Second part is, how do you ask for the things you actually want? Because most of us, again, are so trained, so practiced at being negative, right? Mm-hmm. And so here's the thing about your subconscious mind. In order for it to understand your command and carry it out for you, it has to create some kind of visual picture. The words alone doesn't help your mind understand what it is you're looking for. Okay. And so let's do a quick little test right now. So I want you to make this picture in your mind and tell me how quickly you can make this picture. Okay. How quickly can you make a picture of your mind holding onto a cup of coffee?
Got it.
Can you make that picture? Got it, right? Boom, right?
That one's well practiced, so.
Now I want you to make a picture of don't spill the coffee. How quickly can you make that picture?
Oh, you're asking the wrong person. Don't spill the coffee. Okay. Spilling the coffee.
Spilling the coffee.
Isn't that interesting? Again, I didn't hear the don't and it just pictured me spilling coffee. How fascinating.
That's exactly it. Your subconscious mind, there are certain things that it cannot make pictures of. Don't is a big one. Mm-hmm. Not is another one. No longer. So those things we use those all the time. Don't do this. You know, I'm not that, and I'm no longer this. Right. And so when you give a command and your subconscious mind get confused because it doesn't know how to make that particular picture, it make the picture of the rest of the command. So if you are thinking, you know, like you're, I keep on going back to depression. So if you're depressed and you want to get out of there and you're like, I don't want to be depressed. Outwardly without training, that sounds amazing. But the command you're still giving your mind is be depressed, because your mind cannot make the picture of don't.
Yeah, wow.
Right? And so let's have some fun with this. So for the listener and you too, Kate, definitely. I'm going to give another command and I want you to do the command and see what comes up, right? I'm going to count to three and I'm going to give you the command. 1, 2, 3. Don't think of a yellow flower. What popped up?
Daffodil was straight in my brain.
Yellow flowers, right?
Yeah.
And if you want to take this to the next step, get on your computer, get on your phone, go to Google and do your thing. Don't give me blue cars, you know, don't show me pink shoes and see what comes up. You're going to get everything pink. It's not going to know what it is. Yeah. So really pay attention to what it is that you want. So if you're depressed and you want to be, you know, happy, that's a big stretch. And I'll tell you why in a little bit. But let's say you want to be happy. Start focusing on that word, right? So instead of thinking, I'm so depressed and I hate this and I don't want to be depressed, start thinking, I'm depressed right now. I like to be this way. I'm ready to be this way. I choose to be this way. Mm-hmm. How powerful is that when you can start choosing your emotion, right?
Yes. I love that. And so tell me, what's the stretch between depression and telling yourself I want to be happy then? Because you said it's
that's a marathon, isn't it? If you have practiced being depressed for a while, and that could be weeks, it could be days, it could be months or years, you practice and you know how to do this and you haven't practiced being happy. So like, just like a regular real life marathon, if I had to do one right now, no, I will give up in about 45 seconds.
Oh yeah. I'll see you at the finish line with the water and the oranges in hand, because I won't be running it.
No, not at all. Right. And so when you are in a negative state and you've been practicing being in that negative state for a long time, that is your mind's safety zone. It wants to keep you there and it's going to do everything it can to keep you there. So going from this dark or negative or heavy negative state to something really positive, it's going to be a stretch. It's going to be running that marathon. So what I recommend to all my clients is the first place to go to is a space of calmness. Because you can be anxious and go to calm. You can be depressed and go to calm. You can be overwhelmed and go to calm. Anything you feel.
That. Yeah.
Calm is like a reset. It's like one way to imagine that is, you know, you're in a house or in your car and the music is just blasting and it's music you don't want to hear and it's loud and it's obnoxious, right? The first thing you have to do is change it, right? You have to do something. So the easiest thing to do is shut it off for a moment. And that's what going to calm is. It's going to give you a clean slate. And I said earlier that you can choose your emotion. Would you like me to show your listener how to do that?
Yes, please.
It is so simple. I mean, like, this seriously should be taught in first grade or maybe even younger. Okay. So again, recognizing you're the boss of your mind and your mind will carry out whatever it is that you ask it to. You're the boss. It's your assistant. It's going to do it. So the first thing you want to do is recognize your emotion. So many people pretend They don't feel that way. They don't have that emotion. And when you pretend it doesn't exist, it's like that big elephant in the room. It's going to get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. So take away its power. And the easiest way to take away its power is give it a name, recognize it, accept that it is what it is right this moment. Mm-hmm. Right. So now you're anxious. Recognize, okay, I'm anxious, and that's okay to be anxious. Now, yeah. What do you choose to do next? Right. So recognize you're anxious and say to yourself, and you can do this out loud, or if you're with other people, or if you just prefer, do it inside your mind. Think, even though I'm anxious, I choose to be calm. And say that 3 times, just kind of get your personal assistant's attention, because it's so used to practicing anxious, right? And so now, even though I'm anxious, I choose to be calm. I choose to be calm. I choose to be calm. And then keep repeating, I am calm. I am calm, over and over and over again. And initially, it might take you a couple minutes, but the more time you practice it, the quicker you're going to get there. And as you're repeating the I am calm, 2 things you want to do. One is speak to yourself in the calmest voice you can muster. I am calm. I am calm. Doesn't really help.
Probably right? Wouldn't fly. Yeah.
So as much as you can muster, I am calm. Take deep breaths in between. Slow down in between. Do whatever it is you need to show your mind. And the other thing you want to do is I want you to imagine doing something that calms you down, whatever that is. For me, that's getting a massage. So when I need to go to my calm space in my head, I'm on the massage table. There's great, you know, music in the background. There's aromatherapy. There's heat. There's just muscles relaxing. That's my space of calmness. If you find calmness by reading a book, imagine yourself reading a book or listening to your favorite song or drawing or watching your favorite YouTube videos, whatever it is that calms you down. Imagine yourself doing that. And the reason for that is your subconscious mind doesn't know the difference between what is real versus what's imagined. Your mind is basically off or on. Mm-hmm. So if you are thinking it and feeling it, your mind's like, we're there. We're calm. This is amazing. And another way to look at that with your assistant in the picture is you start feeling anxious. Your assistant immediately go, oh, boss wants to be anxious. Let's give her that experience. And it's going to do the same thing it's done before. Look in the past, look at the current place, project something into the future. But now you're like, even though I'm anxious, I choose to be calm. Your subconscious mind's like, what? Wait, what? And now you're like, I choose to be calm. I choose to be calm. And your subconscious mind's like, wait, what happened? What's happening? And then you say, I choose to be calm. I am calm. Calm looks like this. This is the experience I want to have. You're being so incredibly clear to your subconscious mind. And because you're being so clear, it can take you down from a very stressful event to calm really, really fast.
I love that. That's such a great strategy. And like you said, totally learnable, which I don't think is a word, but totally able to be learned by, you know, even like you said, like first graders and that, just knowing how to soothe ourselves. Like we often need, you know, we can be our own, like just through our own self-talk and knowing the right key and powerful words to say to really get our subconscious attention and make sure it's following the commands that we want. So, oh my goodness, I've read your book and I've even learned more from just speaking with you about all of this stuff. But I guess the most important thing that I want to make sure that you're sharing with everyone, because I'm sure many of my listeners are just like I feel like this is an episode you guys should listen to at least twice, because there's so many nuggets of gold and understanding and things that we're, like you said, we're just not taught at an age where it would be so helpful. But this is why we do things like what we do, right, Jackie? So we can get it out there. But where can people find you, extra support, your books? You also mentioned you have a freebie. Please share that info for everyone now.
Definitely. So I had a podcast. I stopped recording a new episode a couple years ago, but it's still available. Mm-hmm. And it's called Stop the Bully Within, because that's what I call that inner voice, is your inner bully, which is worse than the outer bully, because the inner bully would live with you 24/7.
Yeah.
So if you search for Stop the Bully Within on your favorite podcast application, you'll find it. And there's a 2 seasons worth and maybe 30, 50 episodes somewhere in between there. And they're 30 minutes episodes, and they go into these things in more details, and it gives you action steps. So like this week, do this. And it's a few, you know, simple action steps that really help you to understand your mind and take control of your mind. So that's one free resource I have. Another free resource on my website is a simple ebook that is called something similar to this. I just changed the name of it, so I apologize if I'm messing up. But I believe the latest name is 6 Simple Ways to Defeat Your Inner Critic. And it takes concept from some of my books, a couple of my books, and kind of put them all together of 6 different things you can start doing to start transforming that negative inner voice into something that is positive, that is support for you.
Yeah.
And then my books are on Amazon. I have 3 out right now that are content-based. And the 4th one is a journal that goes with the first book so you can actually truly practice it.
I love
it. And the next 2 are coming out by the end of this year.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
Are we able to say what are they about? You can't say yet.
Well, I can definitely can. So the first book in my Words of Wisdom for Teens series is called 5 Simple Steps to Manage Your Mood. So book 1 is that. Book 4 is the companion journal.
Okay.
Book 2 is I Would, But My Damn Mind Won't Let Me. Book 5 is the companion journal. Book 3 is Jumpstart Your Confidence. And book 6 is the journal for that.
Oh, wonderful. I love that. So a complete series and the workbooks and everything. So that's amazing.
Right.
As I said, guys, I cannot recommend enough, especially for teenagers. You will not find a better book to help understand yourself better and how to take back control of your thoughts and feelings. And then ultimately, like you said, that your outcomes and your experience of your life, there is no more valuable information to learn and understand. And let's all practice this week, even though I'm feeling anxious, overwhelmed, stressed, afraid, I choose to be calm. I love that. I'm going to put that into practice and repeat that myself this week. I'm sure it'll come in handy. So thank you so much again for your time, Jackie. You're an absolute gift to the world and I really, really appreciate you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for this time.
Hey, you. Thanks so much for tuning into the show. If you enjoyed listening and you're thinking, okay, now what? Well, if you're struggling to put into practice what I taught and wishing you could get some extra help from me, did you know that I do one-on-one online coaching to help teenagers become more resilient? Just visit kategladden.com for more info. And to keep your motivation going in between episodes, be sure to follow me on Instagram @kategladden.